system analysis. We say, okay, what is the minimum size wiring that the utility would install? And we look at the cost associated with the installation of that minimum size wiring. In a sense, if you built a whole system with the minimum size wiring, how much would it cost? And then, how much would it cost to build a whole system as it's designed? And that develops a percentage for us. It's that percentage that then gets put into the customer charge. Because the customer is going to say 40% of that line of the system is at the minimum size cost. So the 40% of the distribution wires get placed into that charge. Right? And that's what we traditionally use. It's an industry standard way of doing it, probably the most common. Now, when you set the customer charge correctly, of course it helps to stabilize revenues for the utility. It reduces seasonal customers. I'm from Michigan, you've heard me say that. We have a lot of seasonal customers, and we don't charge them the proper customer charge. Our year-round ratepayers are subsidizing seasonal customers. Now, with that said, it will impact low-use customers, but don't necessarily intermix low-use and low-income, because low-income is all over the board. Some are, in fact, low-use. Some are, in fact, high-use. And so, you know, low income can be helped or harmed by increases in the customer charges. Now, in your situation, what you're going to see is you're pretty cool. You're like perfect for your customer charges for residential. The cost of service came out at $15.34. You're charging $15.54. So I've spent, you know, we spent a lot of years moving that slowly upward, and we got it there. Then you have, we did develop a customer charge, and we're not sure if we're going to implement it, but we want to talk to you about it, is when you start getting into residential service, you have regular residential, 200 amp service, sometimes less, and some are large homes. And they want larger services, and they get over 200 amps. And there's more infrastructure needs when that occurs. That should be recovered in the customer charge. So what we did is I wanted to go in and identify the charges of the cost between a 200 amp service and above 200 amp service. So in other words, if we follow this rate structure, customers that had over 200 amps, so right now we don't really know exactly how many we have, they'd be charged about $24 a month customer charge. And of course, the regular residential between 15 and 16. So,
is that the base charge you're talking about?
That'd be the base charge, correct. Then the small general service. Remember what I said early on, that traditionally when I modeled that class, I assumed three-phase service. So because I assume three-phase service, the customer charge, from a cost perspective, came out higher than it did in, if I look at small general service, less than 25, most of them are going to be single-phase services. So the customer charge actually shows it should come down, from 28 down to about 25. All right. So what we're proposing to do is to create two different rate classes here, or not rate classes, but customer charges. Just like for residential being 200 amps, over 200 amps, is to see if we can develop a rate, if not this year, maybe next year, where the general service has a single phase service and a three phase service. So again, we can get more accurate. But it's all predicated, we have the numbers, on if we can get the data to develop the rate. So other than that, your customer charges are in pretty good shape. So but those are two changes I'd like to make. Like I said, the single phase and three phase service and 200 amps and over 200 amps for residential.
Before you go on, this is another area that we were looking for some indication from you all on was whether to, whether you'd be comfortable with making the move from the, what's current to what the cost of service is indicating. And as Mark said, I mean, we've had some years where there have been pretty dramatic differences between cost of service and current rate. But in this case, there really is not a big disconnect.
Are you going to address the solar power users?
I could talk about it, yes. I don't have slides on it.
Okay. What was presented to council is four options.
Yeah.
So are you going to talk about those four options?
I wasn't planning on doing that today. I think we're planning on doing that in July.
Right, and councilor, at that meeting, council's pleasure was just option three or option four, so that's what we were going to bring back. That next month, we're going to bring back to look for a formal recommendation from the LUC.
Okay, so that's coming up.
Yes,
okay. So they'll be separate. The two rate issues will be separate.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, then, one of the things when you come back, and I asked you at that meeting, you presented a slide that had 250 kilowatt hours, 670 kilowatt hours, and 1,500 kilowatt hours.
Correct.
And you had the bill using the 2019 rates, and then if you recalculate it to where the fixed costs were the same. What we're doing now is we are basically subsidizing a group.
No.
Sure you are. Well, you got, if you were to, everybody had the same base and you covered all your fixed costs, it would have resulted in an increase a 15% to the 250 kilowatts and a decrease.
Sure, yeah.
I can address that question.
Okay.
Do you have the slide for that? You all gave me back the slide.
Sure. Let's see, where were you?
Well, I was going to address the question, jump to the last slide.
Jump to the last slide? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you?
One of the things I did look at is, okay, if we, what would happen if we, the customer charge currently is $15.54. We wanted to recover all our distribution costs through a fixed customer charge. It would come to $27.11. Now, there's two things I want to point out about that. Obviously, the first one is customer impacts, which, of course, anybody less than 690 kilowatt hours would see an increase. At 300, they would see a 15% increase. But there's another, actually to me, a more important reason. Remember what I said about that minimum system analysis? That takes a portion of the distribution infrastructure and in theory says how much it would cost to build that infrastructure if every customer used 1 kilowatt hour. Right? That's what that customer charge represents. Obviously, customers don't all use 1 kilowatt hour, some use more, a lot use more. So that amount is driven on usage, okay? Now, when you take a look at residentials, and this is the part, some residential customers, like smaller homes, may only create a 3 kW demand on the system. And it's the kW demands that drives the infrastructure sizing. Other customers are larger homes, and they might create a 25 kW demand. So they're putting on bigger demands. We don't have, because we don't have a demand charge for residential, we have no way of sending a real accurate price signal. So what we attempt to do is to get as close as we can by putting in energy. Now, does that make sense? Because it's not, $27 is not how much it costs to serve every residential on the distribution. Some only create a 3 kW impact, and the transformer sizing is accounted for, in a sense, and the wiring sizing all the way back to the substation. Another home, larger home, might create a 25 kW impact, almost 10 times the size, and so they need a bigger transformer, and there's a cost associated with that. And so that's what we're attempting to do. That's why it's real dangerous when you try to take all of that distribution cost and roll it all into a customer charge.
Okay, but what you're really, are you not taking a portion of your fixed cost and making it variable?
Correct.
Okay.
But I want to also address that, because that's a very good statement. Now, and I'm going to give you a little history on this. You're probably well aware of it. In the 1890s, we billed electric service by going into their homes, counting the number of light bulbs, number of appliances, and figuring out their bill. All right. During the 1890s, we invested as an industry in kilowatt hour recording meters. All right. They were very controversial at the time they were put in, but that was the best we could do. About 1906, we developed demand recording meters, but they were very expensive mechanical meters. And that technology didn't change until the 1970s, really, the 1980s, and it's only been recently that it's become very cost effective. So for all these last 100 years, the only mechanism we had of billing customers for residential and small general service was a customer charge and an energy rate. Even though we know that the most inaccurate way of recovering our cost is on a per kilowatt hour basis, especially when it comes to distribution, because it's not sized to handle kilowatt hours, it's sized to handle demands. So what a lot of utilities are doing now is they're moving toward demand charges or something to get closer. But the industry, it's hesitant to implement demand charges for residential. I would dare say that 75% of people that work for the utility don't understand demands, let alone asking your customers to. Okay, that makes sense. So we're limited. So we're collecting a variable kilowatt hour rate. We really should be recovering in demand, which is variable, but it's more stable. Does that make more sense?
How are the two different?
How are the two different? Oh, that's great. Thank you. What the difference is the metering records the customer's peak usage that occurs throughout the course of the month. So let's say, hypothetically, it's a business. Let's say they come in and they turn on all their equipment and they create 100 kW demand. And after an hour, they shut it off. So they create 100 kW demand, they use 100 kilowatt hours. Customer right next to them comes and turns on all their equipment, creates 100 kW demand, and lets it run for the entire month, for 30 days. All right. So they both have, but they use, what's that, 72,000 kilowatt hours. So one customer used 100 kilowatt hours, the other one 72,000, but they created the same demand on this distribution system because their sizing requirements were identical. Does that make more sense?
So you're looking at peak demand?
Customer peak demand, on distribution only.
I'd like to think of it in terms of water.
Yep.
It's the pipe size right. That's necessary to deliver that flow of water to you. Not how much water you use, but the size of the pipe that's necessary to get that water to
correct.
You.
Yep.
If I have a huge demand, I can't get that through a 1-inch pipe. I'm going to have to install a 6-inch pipe, no matter how much water I use during that month. If I want it all at once, like you said, I've got to put in a big pipe at a higher cost. That's how I've always thought about the difference between demand and energy.
What's my meter collecting? Isn't it collecting?
Just kilowatt hours.
Kilowatt hours.
That's all it's
energy.
Collecting.
And not demand.
So we're giving the example of somebody using 3 kilowatts or 25, so per hour, during the peak demand at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if I was using 3, I'd use 3 kilowatt hours?
If you had a 3 kW and you use it for an hour, it would be 3 kilowatt hours.
And if I had air conditioning on and my house was 60 degrees, I'd use 25 kW over the hour, 25 kilowatt hours.
Correct. It's a little different, but
we don't talk about it.
That's
we
do track.
I know Jim doesn't want me to go down the track of demand charges, but it is something that the industry.
Yeah, that's partially why you some utilities want you to charge your car at night, which we don't get any incentive to do that in our system compared to.
Not right now, because you don't have time to use.
I know the city of Fort Collins has a demand kind of system where there are different charges throughout the day.
Time of year.
And they have to install demand meters
in the system? They probably have the demand reads. They have hourly recording meters.
Yeah,
and hourly recording meters can get the demand.
They've got smart meters.
Yeah.
That they had a big.
And for Loma to implement a system like that, we'd have to have some
branch for, right?
Where the industry is heading is
$18 million.
Move toward time and use rates. And so we can promote electric vehicles. We can give the proper value so that we can create incentives to use energy at the lowest cost time periods. And so when Platte River wants to charge more during an hour, we have the mechanism to send that price in to our customers. Right now, everything's levelized. So these people have electric vehicles get overcharged.
I've read that some utilities in Texas with wind at night have actually give some homes free electricity if they run their dryer and anything they can do at night as opposed to during the day.
Yeah.
I think to install time of use meters in the city of Loma would be pretty significant cost, wouldn't it?
I'm sure it would.
That'd be a great idea.
Didn't that chart, doesn't that kind of represent your demand? Go back to that chart right there, because you've broken it out into different categories for each user. And don't they peak at a different demand than your residential?
This represents, this is just the customer charge. So this just represents the meter.
The monthly base charge.
The base charge for the meter.
Base charge.
Yeah.
But doesn't your base charge, aren't you saying that your base charge could change due to your demand?
No.
The base charge stays the same. It's a fixed charge all through the year.
The demand, we don't have a way of billing it right now. But in an ideal world, we would have a demand recording meter with our time of use rates. And when a customer created a demand, we'd pick it up. And we would charge them for that demand.
That would go into the rate.
Well, correct.
Not the base rate.
Not the base rate. Correct. Not going to the usage component. So.
But it's a different.
It's got some. Now, this is actually the end of my slides. And I was wondering if I could get some feedback on what you thought about the 5%. And if you'd allow me the plus or minus 2%, most of that increase is going to go into the usage component, because we've got the customer charge pretty close. We may come back, it depends what staff tells me, but with this 200 amp customer charge and over 200 amp in a single phase and three phase, for consideration in July. The plan for July is once you get the feedback, we'll go back and design the rates, and then at your July meeting, we'll do a teleconference.
I think my input is I feel good about what you're recommending.
Thank you.
I tend to agree with that 5%.
Really?
I'll get you one. I have extras.
As far as the study goes, yeah.
Thank you.
I would request, though, I'd just like to see a list of these classes and subclasses with the number of customers.
Okay.
I'll do
this. Yes.
Good.
Last time we just
read
a couple things. Good job again.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want me to talk about?
So,
so we did get the plus minus too, is that right?
Plus, oh, yes, plus minus.
That was agreement, yeah. And you're also okay with making the move to the cost of service amounts for the base charge, the monthly base charges?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that okay with you?
So, it's just, you're gonna come back in July then still, and then we're also gonna talk about the self-gens.
Right, yeah, that's what we'll be looking for, a recommendation from you to take to council, and so we'll bring back the two, the self-gen scenarios, with the one, the cost of service one, and then the subsidized one. And then we'll look at, if the subsidized one was chosen, then we would look at the impact that would have on the residential, the non-solar residential rate.
Can I ask a question regarding that?
Sure.
You keep using that subsidized word and it drives me nuts. Sorry.
Oh, it's just accurate.
Yeah. Well, I'm having trouble with it. When you come back, and I'm referring to the slide that was presented,
back in April.
Page 18, back in May, was it May? May 14th, I think. It showed, and you didn't address it, it showed the rates when you have a single, everybody, all the fixed costs are embedded in a single rate.
Yes.
Okay. That, and so going to my question about your taking fixed costs and moving up into variable costs, if you have that, you're covering all the fixed costs among everybody, that demonstrated a rate shift, that there would be those at 250 kilowatt hours, they would have a rate increase of 15%. Almost,
yes,
60.
I know the slide you're,
yeah,
referring to.
And so.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
To me, we're already cost shifting. Because if we have this, if we recover all our fixed costs and everybody gets that base rate, it's granted it's higher, we are already having the high kilowatt hour users are subsidizing the low kilowatt users. So the 250 kilowatt hours, if they had the total recovered cost, they would have to see a 15% increase in their rate, whereas the 1500 kilowatt hours would see a decrease of 8% in their rate.
That's correct.
So we're already doing some subsidizing.
Councilor, I would say that the way that, and this is a pretty standard practice, is that rates are designed around the average or the middle user, and so then either side of that is either going to be, they're either going to benefit or they're not going to benefit.
But it would not constitute a subsidy.
Why wouldn't it?
Let me try to explain it. I have this slide, so
okay.
I mean, I know the wheels,
yeah,
has a benefit. But what this has is three different users, 250 kilowatt hours a month, 670, and 1500. And looking at if we were to take and charge that base charge at $27 as a flat, how would it impact? And now, according to this, the 250 kilowatt hour customer will go up 16%, 1500 will go down 8.8. But I want you to think about it a little bit differently, because that difference between the 15 and the 27 is a usage-based charge for the distribution lines, based upon a customer's peaks that they create in the distribution system. So if you look at this, a 250 kilowatt hour customer, that's probably that 3 kW customer. They're creating relatively modest amounts of demands, where that 1500 kW customer is probably creating about a 7 or 8 or 9 kW demand, almost twice as much. So that, from a distribution perspective, what's happening, we're charging the same rate, we'd be overcharging 250 kilowatt hour customer, overcharging or undercharging 1500, because that 1500 customer is creating a larger demand. but they're paying this as if they created demand like a 670 kilowatt hour customer. I know it's a little complex.
But probably nobody else is interested in this, so.
I think we can talk out.
Maybe we can talk out.
We have some other background information we'll be providing. I know Courtney has that. No, direct for him. It's the book that we handed out some months ago.
Thank you, Mark.
On the Platte River Power Park, that we get charged just per kilowatt hour as opposed to actual demand. They build the 600 megawatts they've got to build for. The guy, like I agree with Mark, the guy that's using the 25 kW has to have more demand built in up at Platte River Power than the guy that's using 3 kW. So, but we just get charged a per kilowatt hour charge, if I'm correct on that, coming in to all of them, which is about 75% of our total electricity. So, in a sense, I would, if I know what I'm talking about, maybe I don't. The high user is being subsidized by the low user by the PR, by the Platte River rate.
Well, and I see the low users subsidized by the higher users with what
or we're here, doing. But in the but the Platte River
user subsidized were.
I think that's unavoidable. Just because, I mean, you can't design a rate that's perfect for every single user, so you design for pretty much the middle.
Well, all I'm looking for is an acknowledgement that that's true, that we are, in fact, subsidizing the lower level users at the expense of the higher level users.
Except coming in from Platte River Power, we're subsidizing the opposite in the way I would see that, because we're not charging a base charge. That comes into Love and Water, so that's passed through to us. That 3 cents or 3.5 cents, whatever it is. But
well, they just made it all variable.
Hmm.
They just made it all variable.
They're having to build because they've got for those 25 kW customers. They're having to build larger infrastructure up there to meet that demand of people that are using a lot of electricity compared to the 3 kW one. They don't have much demand up there.
We can have a conversation of this after, so I don't want to tie up everybody's time.
Yeah, well, I struggle with that too, and I think there is some social stuff to it, but I think that because the Platte River Power part, what they charge us is about 75% of the total revenue, right?
And yet it's in the 70 to 75% range. Yep.
So that's a big number that we just. But it's a kWh charge alone. There's no base charge in that. The way we spread it to our customers.
Well, yeah, but my point is, they have to recover the fixed cost, so they've rolled it into a variable cost.
Yeah, but that benefits the houses that are using a lot. When they put that in, they have to put in it's like Joseph. They got to have a pipe this big, and if you had all 3 kW customers. Platte River would only have a pipe this big going to the city, but as opposed to a pipe that big.
Okay, I think we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is item 7, 2020 proposed budgets for water, wastewater, and power, as will be presented by Jim.
Yes, and then before we go on, I wanted to acknowledge John, who sat through a presentation back in April. John Butler, who sat through. Sorry, John, I'll try to find accolades for you later. So John sat through a kickoff meeting that we had with Mark by video conference, and appreciated your time and attendance at that, John. So, a little overview of our 2020 budgets for the three utilities, and just hitting some highlights here. So what we are proposing, and we have our meeting with the city manager, I believe it's on the 28th of June, is four new FTEs for 2020, a pre-apprentice line worker for the line crews, a journey meter technician, a water quality technician, and a civil engineer one for the water engineering group. Those four positions in total would increase our personal services budget by about $400,000, with about $100,000 each for water and waste and $200,000 for power. These are all kind of highlighting operating increases that we're seeing in 2020 compared to 19. So at this point, it's a 2.75% increase that's plugged in for salaries. We have some temporary positions in our department, and we're seeing about $155,000 reduction in the budget for those in 20 versus 19. Health insurance, pleasant surprise, 2%. We were told to plug in as an assumed increase. That works out to $53,000 in total. I mentioned earlier, and I know we've talked a number of times here about the new customer information system, the new utility billing system that's going to be coming online next year. Water, wastewater, and power are funding 75% of that, and the lion's share of that was budgeted in 2018. So there was another $511,000 budgeted in 2019, and that will not be recurring because that $511,000 is part of the implementation cost. And then cost allocations, which once again, those are the expenses for services provided by other city departments to water, waste, and power. So that's going to be like IT and HR and facilities. And we're seeing an overall increase of $120,000. I'm sorry, this is a typo. That actually should say decrease for wastewater. So it's a $93,000 decrease for water, $72,000 decrease for wastewater. Power is going up by $285,000. And just a couple of other things. We have a significant change. So I know I've talked about this before, but with the city's accounting principles, only one utility can have an asset, so we can't take a truck and split it between water and wastewater. So we will have, say, a truck that's going to be shared between water and wastewater. It'll be a water asset, but wastewater will contribute toward the purchase of that truck. So that's what these assets funded by multiple utilities expense represents. And we have a profound decrease in that of $1,068,000 in 2020 versus 19. That almost entirely is attributable to the water quality lab. That is budgeted in the wastewater utility, but the water utility has about $1 million budgeted toward a contribution for the cost of that water quality lab in total, and so that will not be recurring in 2020. For our capital programs between the three utilities, about $137 million for water and raw water over the next 10 years, $82 million for wastewater, and $173 million for power. In getting into the specific utilities for water, we have, this is according to the rate track that was presented here last, would have been September, and then went to City Council and was adopted in November as part of a resolution. A 7% rate increase is what's proposed for water for 2020, and then that's followed by three more years of 7, and then the balance of the window through 2029 is 3.5% per year. This is not 2020, but I thought it's significant to note that we do have $37.6 million in loans programmed in 2019 for Chimney Hollow. We know that construction is not going to be starting in 2019, hoping 2020, and so that loan amount and then the amount we have budgeted for construction will just roll into 2020. And then as far as our 10-year plans and our comparisons to those minimum reserve targets, we have favorable variances throughout the 10 years in water. And I mentioned earlier that we're stepping up over time to that 33% level by 2029, although we are getting there prior to 2029 in each of the three utilities. We do have loans programmed in In the unrestricted funds for water in 2020, 2026, and 2027, and then for the SIF fund balance, we have loans in 2020, 2023 through 25, and then in 2029. As far as operating expenses for water, key changes happening in 20 versus 19. Our CBT facilities contract, we're seeing a $200,000 decrease in that line item. We have increases in our CBT and Windy Gap assessments totaling about $150,000. We have lawn irrigation return flows. That's a legal and engineering case that's been going on for a number of years, and we're expecting a lower amount of scope for that in 2020, so $100,000 decrease there. A couple of other court-related items, domestic water rights lowering by $85,000, and then an increase in our water resources diligence cases of $100,000. And then in our water quality lab supplies, an increase of $100,000 there. With the new lab coming online next year, there's going to be some transitional costs, essentially things that we normally do in-house that we won't be able to do until the new lab is certified. So you'll see that here, and it also shows up on the wastewater highlight slide. So with wastewater, and similar to water, there was a rate track that was taken to City Council in November and adopted, and it is 7% increase for 2020, and then like water, 3 more years of 7, and then followed by 3.5% per year for the balance through 2029. Again, with wastewater, positive variances on the 10-year plan in comparison to those minimum targets. We do have one loan in water unrestricted in 2022, and then in wastewater SIF, we have loans in 2022, 24, and 26. And then as far as the key operating changes for wastewater, we had a selenium study programmed in at $175,000 this year. That's gonna be continuing into 2020, but there will be not as much necessary in 20 as there was this year. We also have some increases at the wastewater plant for parts and supplies and sludge hauling, some instruments that are needing to be replaced, and then just sludge hauling increases both volume and price-wise. The water quality supplies that I mentioned earlier and services. About every 10 years, we do an updating of our wastewater utility plan, which is kind of a comprehensive look at our system, both the wastewater plant and then our collection system. To evaluate areas where we might be needing to expand capacity and accommodate new development as it comes on. So next year is the mark for updating that. We also have $300,000 plugged in for cleaning two interceptors that are particularly clogged. And
to use those to filter maybe, out the big stuff?
To filter out the big stuff?
What are our interceptors?
The interceptor, Roger, you want to?
It's a large diameter sewer line that, think of it as the interstate highway. Small roads, residential roads collect to larger streets like Wilson and 84 and ultimately out to I-25. Yeah. The interceptor is the I-25 of our sewer system. So it collects large portions of town and conveys it down to the wastewater plant.
Courtney finds that quite humorous.
Roger, using analogy speak. Well done.
I like it.
And then we have we had a loan at least budgeted for this year from wastewater general to wastewater SIF, and from every appearance, we're not going to need that loan. That was programmed in for $1 million, and so we do not have that programmed again in 2020. For power. In our 10-year plan, as Mark just mentioned, we have a 5% rate increase that's assumed for 2020, which is a combination of a pass-through of wholesale power. When we get a 1% rate increase from Platte River, that in order to break even on our bottom line, we have to do a 0.81% rate increase in order to break even. So by doing a 5% rate increase, it's a partially a pass-through of Platte River's increase, And then it's also a 4.19% increase for O&M and capital expenses. I mentioned earlier, Platte River has a 1% rate increase programmed in for 2020, and then a series of 2% rate increases through 2025, and then 1.7% from 2026 to 2029. And we were very delighted when we saw that that was the level of increases that they were proposing, feeling like that's pretty modest. And with power, again, we have positive variances versus our minimum reserve targets throughout the 10-year period. There is one loan programmed in 2024 for power in the PIF fund. And then as far as operational changes, in 2020, we have a decrease of $800,000 for work that's going to be going on up the canyon, restoration work as a result of the flood that we're going to be responsible for. We had 17 handheld radios that were budgeted for this year, $55,000, won't need to do that again in 2020. We have some software for our meter data management system, which is a new system tracking the data for our electric meters that's coming online. That's a $90,000 expense that will be every year. And then we have the rate study this year, which is $60,000, and we do not have that programmed in again for 2020.
Question, Jim.
Sure, Gene.
Off the Big Thompson, are we required to remove all the underwater or underground distribution lines in that system? What's going to happen?
I believe the answer is no, but Frank, do you have a little more illumination on that?
Well, so as far as power goes, we have very little underground. There's electric infrastructure up there. It's all mainly overhead.
No, I'm talking about underground and water lines.
So you're talking about the
pipe?
The pipe.
Oh, okay.
The hydro plant, Gene, or what do you?
Well, there are pipelines that previously fed the hydro plant.
That's right. I can give you an update on that at the end.
Okay.
Be happy to.
Okay.
So, with that, any comments or questions? And just looking, and I'll say, and I know I said this last year, so we're looking for an indication of support for the budget that we've assembled, because what you have in front of you is not exactly what will go to council. There's still reconciling going on with our budget office as far as the number of FTEs and the level at which they're budgeted. I would still call us in transition as far as we got new budgeting software last year, so this is our second year using it. However, we also got new payroll processing software last year called UltiPro, and this is the first year that UltiPro is being used to feed the power plan budget software, and so things are still being trued up on that end. But this, what you have in front of you, is very close to what will be going to City Council. So just wanted to see about getting an indication of support for what we've put together here. Chief?
Jim, the city manager, Steve Adams, put out an email recently saying that some of the budget is questionable in terms of having more money. Is power and water going to be impacted by some of the budget cuts and what he's proposing there?
Probably should defer to Joe for that one.
I'll go ahead and cover that in my director's comments. How's that for deferring that? Okay.
So far we owe Gene two things.
I've got both of them too.
Yes.
I have a question just not on this. It's on your monthly financials or your quarterly, whatever they are.
Oh, sure.
What's just the overall impact of this cool screen on the water and the power sales? Have you seen a significant cut?
Well, through May, we were $240,000 under budget in water sales. Power, let's see, I don't know off the top of my head. I know power, we were under in, definitely under in sales and purchased power.
It was a cool May. And what?
So yes, so power were under in sales by about $430,000, and we're under in purchase power by $235,000.
Probably so, related to the weather.
No question. Yeah, I saw something on the news last night, I think, where they said by this time last year, we already had 15 90-degree days. That's kind of incredible. But yeah, I think we might get our first 90-degree day next week.
Yeah, I heard it's going to be pretty warm next week. It is going to snow this weekend up in the mountains.
I'm glad that's not here. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. That's a good presentation.
Thank you.
Adopt a motion indicating support for the proposed 2020 water and power budget for City Council's consideration.
I'd second it. Any further discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Back to the right floor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Well, my brain is full of numbers now. Can I be excused?
All right, so that takes us on to commission and council reports. Do we want to go ahead and
go
to the council reports?
Get me out of the way first.
Yeah.
Well, not much report. I shared with you, I had a trip last week back to Washington, D.C. It was with Accelerate Colorado, which is an organization that was put together by Aurora. And they used to go with Denver, and Denver would march in there and say, here's what Denver wants, and then they'd leave, and Aurora say, hey, how about us? And by that time, all the legislators had left. So they created their own organization, and now a lot of the smaller communities outside of Denver are joining in that, as well as a lot of business organizations going back there. They had probably 15 items on that were issues of concern to the various organizations, municipalities, and so forth. One of which was the towers and the overreach by, at least our opinion, the overreach by the FCC, and so I mentioned that. They were, of the issues that were brought up, they were probably most receptive to that particular one. So I would say, maybe with a little luck, we'll actually get Congress to do something in that regard, because they are aware of it. They realize that FCC probably overstepped. We didn't have a council meeting this week because we were supposed to be up in Breckenridge, which I kind of enjoy up there. But part of it was several of the members had things come up that precluded their attendance at CML, and then the decision was made by Steve, well, the council's not going. I was the last one standing in council, just because I kind of like to go up there. And he decided that, well, as staff, we're not going to go either, and there's no reason for me to go. So but they did not institute a meeting for tonight. So not much has happened. What has happened in council last week was broadband related. So other than that, not in the utility area that I can think of. Unless you can make something, Joe.
No, sir.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. Commissioner reports. Larry?
Nothing.
Gene?
I just have the two questions.
Coming right up.
And Deck?
I haven't got anything.
Nothing here?
And I have nothing either.
Okay.
So does that take us on to you, Joe?
Yes, sir. I've got just a few items then. Thank you for adding those too. It was mentioned before, it was a major step, and it was the last major step in the expansion project at the wastewater treatment plant last week. Sludge was transferred from digesters 1 and 2, the old smaller digesters, to the new digesters 3 and 4, the two large ones that you saw in Roger's presentation. That went pretty well. There's a number of systems that have to work, heating system transfer and so on. So that was the last major item. The monthly report for June is 87% complete. They're working on the last items now. We would expect it to be pretty much complete by the end of July. We'll do hydro seeding and landscaping once the weather cools down, probably in fall. And we will be planning some kind of a ceremony when everything's ready to go, first flush ceremony or something like that. That will involve city council as well as LUC. So that'll be in the fall. This last week, we had the pre-con for the water quality lab. You've had some presentations on that, a very, very good construction bid on that. So the pre-con has been, we held the pre-con, and we'll be ready to start construction down there in the corner of the wastewater treatment plant within the next couple of weeks. Our power guys today finished, I believe, the last part of the canyon, right, for the conversion voltage? Did they not make the left turn into Waltonia?
It's still 2400 when you turn left, but yes, the main backbone is all 7200.
Okay, I thought they were going to make the left turn into Waltonia, but the voltage conversion project that's been going on for the last couple of years is now up to the Waltonia turnoff to the left, and that's scheduled for sometime later this summer.
Yeah, everything should finish up by the end of the year, yeah.
It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough doing ones up there in the Waltonia area. So, hydro. We have essentially three issues remaining regarding decommissioning the plant and surrendering our license to FERC. One of those is the removal, I won't even say abandonment, but the removal and abandonment of the above ground appurtenances, trestles, and so on. We received bids last week for those, and they are being evaluated now. We do have the approval to go forward. Everybody's on the same page. We're just working with the contractor now, or we're working to determine the successful bidder and go from there. We are still in negotiations with the penstock, with the underground penstock that goes under several houses or near several houses in Idlewild. I'll tell you frankly, we are struggling a little bit with that. We've done testing up there. We have not found any asbestos on that pipe, but there is a difference of opinion as to what the remuneration should be for those residents and what our obligations are. So we're working through that. We hope that the abandonment will be done, or the removal will be done this year. We hope to have that done this year. The last component is some dealings with the Forest Service on the area where the reservoir was located above the dam. And there are some disagreements about the extent and scope of the work to be conducted. We are in negotiations with Forest Service right now. Our consultant OTAC is probably going to be revising some plans, and we'll bring that forward. That construction will not occur this year. It's simply we're not far enough along in the negotiations to be able to resolve that this year. So we hope to have the resolution soon so that we can plan to have that done next year.
Is the Forest Service requiring underground trestles to be removed?
Some of the underground appurtenances are being required, but it's mostly the above ground. They are allowing some abandonment in place. What we want to do with the penstock is to fill it with flowable fill and then abandon it in place. And the last one was on the relationship of the general fund budget, the email that you referenced from Steve. In terms of our operating budget, our capital budget, and much of what Jim presented this evening, no, I don't believe there's going to be any impacts whatsoever to that. However, there are ancillary aspects to that, including possibly, and certainly not trying to frighten anybody, could be pay raises, could be things like prohibitions on out-of-state travel, certain things like that. In the interest of fairness and equity across both general fund departments as well as enterprise fund departments, in the interest of equity, anything that is applied to the general fund would be applied also to the enterprise funds. And I think that's in the interest of equity and fairness.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was...
So that includes personnel costs then?
It could. And there has been nothing decided yet, Larry. Not a thing. But this is just that the number of options.
That's been our practice then, to...
Equity?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. But in terms of our operating budget, in terms of the projects that we're going to do, in terms of what we're going to ask for in terms of staff, what Jim presented, we are going forward with the assumption that that will be approved as submitted.
Yeah, I think Steve in his memo did reference water and power. He referenced police departments and a few other, but
So it, but there is still an awful lot of, there's, finance is working very hard, the budget office is working very hard to crunch numbers. All of the general fund departments submitted potential reductions, 3-5% of their overall operating budgets. And so that's still being calculated through. So the actual outcome in terms of what impacts there may be, still very much to be determined, and nothing, absolutely nothing has been decided, but we will share equally in those types of things. What Jim presented, the meat and potatoes of what we do, there won't be any impacts. That's it, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay. One last thing.
Yes, Steve.
Thank you all for your commitment to the commission. I really appreciate it, and I know council members do, so thank you so much.
Back at you, thank you for your commitment to support and be the liaison, and active liaison to this commission.
You're a great group, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Good question, Sheen. Thanks.
Go ahead, Courtney.
Go ahead.
Oh, if I could toss out one more thank you to Mr. Rose, who took a couple of days out of his time to join us, and Tom as well on the budget reviews where we got more into the nitty gritty thing. So yeah, thank you for that, Larry.
I just wanted to bring up that the packet will be changing the delivery method, so. You're all prepared for that in the future, that in the next few months we won't be mailing them any longer, it will just be a digital delivery. We won't be mailing them any longer, it'll just be a digital delivery.
I pick them up. Is that changing?
I don't know.
Ones and zeros are pretty hard to pick up. We're going to try to go and see, go with full digital.
Full digital?
Mailing a PDF.
Yeah. And then we got to print it off.
Or you could just look at it on a device, or we can talk.
Okay. With that, I believe we're adjourned.